Blog Talk Radio.
All right, welcome to the Today's You podcast. I'm your host, Colin Sylvester. We're going to be talking about all the latest storylines in both college football and college basketball. We'll go with some football first and bring on our Today's You writers, Dustin and Alex. How's it going, guys?
Hey, what's up, Colin?
Hey, Colin.
Not too much. All right, well, the spring games are finally over. It seemed like they had a couple weekends at the end here where there were just a couple games, especially this last one with Oregon and Hawaii closing things out. Alex, you had a really interesting column today on the Oregon spring game and some of the biggest takeaways from that. What are the highlights from that game and sort of the expectations after it when you consider that they have lost Marcus Mariota but also bring back a lot of pieces outside that quarterback position?
Yeah, no doubt. And you know what's funny, Colin, is last week we were talking on the podcast, and one of the questions that you had brought up to Stephen Sheehan was, you know, is Oregon, are they flying under the radar, or, you know, is this a team that's going to be a sleeper next year? And it's almost funny to think of Oregon as a sleeper with, you know, the things that they've accomplished in the past year. So, you know, while everybody's talking about UCLA and their recruiting class, and, you know, everybody's high on USC because of Cody Kessler, and, you know, Arizona State on the rise, it's almost funny to think that that Oregon's kind of flying under the radar. So really paid attention closely to the spring game and brought in a lot of knowledge. And, you know, like I said in the article, the broadcast crew said a pretty good thing about the offense. You know, the equation's a little bit backwards. Last year it was Mario, and they didn't know who was going to step up at wide receiver. This year it's going to be totally different. They didn't necessarily have a quarterback established, but it looks like it's going to be Jeff Lockie, and guy played really well. I thought he was extremely poised in the pocket. I think Braylon Addison is going to have a huge year next year, a guy that was out all of last year with an ACL injury. I just don't think that this is a team that you could sleep on. They bring back three receivers that eclipsed over 2,000 yards, 17 total touchdowns. So, you know, while you could say, oh, well, you know, Lockie torched their defense, you don't know how good they're going to be. I mean, this is probably the best offense that they're going to play all year in that spring game. So, offense should be clicking once more next season. They have a great rushing attack. They have a lot of speed. And, you know, I even touched upon this in my article about how I hate when analysts say you want to get guys the ball so they can get out in space and make a play. I think that's exactly what's going to happen next year. They just have so much speed and so much athleticism that they're going to be, you know, a tough team to play on the schedule for Pac-12 teams.
Yeah, it seems like they have speed everywhere, and that's always the case for Oregon, but even experienced speed, they have wide receivers coming back, they have running backs, a lot of players back on defense, so they might not have a star like Marcus Mariota next year. But Dustin, is there a chance, because Oregon's sort of getting overlooked, I mean, because of what Alex said with all the programs on the rise in the Pac-12, is there a chance that Oregon could be just as good as last year? Maybe even better. I know that's pretty high bar considering they nearly won a national championship. But could they be just as good or better this year in Eugene, Dustin?
Yeah, I think so. I think the way Oregon plays is such a unique style, and they've really hit on, you know, the speed positions and making sure that everybody on their team is so quick. You know, they've gotten to the national championship a couple of years, even when maybe it looked like they would end up being a 4 or 5 ranked team and maybe just miss out again. But they always seem to exceed their expectations. I always feel like Oregon's a team that you always consider a national championship, but they always get overlooked due to the SEC this year with Ohio State in the Big Ten. But, you know, this is a team that they've got their system in place. They use speed and they utilize it so well. I just don't know if they can compete with the depth of the Pac-12 now, as it's probably becoming equal to maybe a little bit lower level or lower standard than the SEC is compared to. So that depth is going to get to you. When you're playing that good a team on a week-in, week-out basis, not that the Pac-12 hasn't been good, but now it's going to be really good. So we'll see how Oregon plays without a star experienced quarterback without some experience guys at some of those other key positions. But they do have a lot of talent. They know how to utilize their speed. Their defense seems to be just good enough. So I wouldn't be surprised if Oregon was another 10-11 win team and was competing for a Pac-12 championship and a spot at the college football playoff again.
Yeah, they've been so good for so long now and still haven't quite gotten that national championship. You get the feeling that if Oregon can bring home a national championship, Mark Helfrich as well is going to be considered with one of those best coaches in the nation. Dustin, your article today was talking about how college football fans really kind of missed out on a rivalry between Urban Meyer and Nick Saban. We got it in the college football playoff this year. But when Urban Meyer was at Florida, the hope was that we would see that cross-divisional rivalry hopefully every year, at least every couple of years. But it's something that we missed out on as fans. Do you think, Dustin, if Urban Meyer had stayed at Florida, that that would have been one of the greatest coaching rivalries in the sport?
Well, I absolutely believe that because you've got two of the best coaches in college football, if not the two best coaches in college football. And you know, people say Nick Saban may be on the decline and Urban Meyer on the rise. You know, had we seen these guys compete over the last 5 to 7 years, I think it would have been interesting to see how that played out as far as the SEC was concerned. Could Florida have churned out as many national championships as Alabama? I think they could have. I mean, Urban Meyer is such a good coach, and that was shown with his work with Ohio State this year, going through three quarterbacks, basically. And the way he was able to establish that offense and improve the defense throughout the season. And one of the things that sparred this article, and I got to thinking about it a little bit, and this may be a bit of a teaser for a future article to come, was, you know, Joe Paterno and Bobby Bowden were two of the most dominant coaches in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. And, you know, those are guys that when – Bobby Bowden moved to Florida State and Joe Paterno at Penn State, they played twice. And I feel like that was such a disservice to college football, because can you imagine those two guys going at it week in, week out, or year in, year out, I should say, every year? It would just be something that you look for. You know, you have those Coach K and Dean Smith battles in the basketball side, and Gene Cady and Bob Knight going at it. So you don't see those traditional coaching matchups that you usually get on the basketball side of things. And I think it would have been so many storylines, so many conference titles, and so many national championships had gone through had Urban Meyer stayed down there. It's just an interesting thing to think about. And we'll probably see Saban and Meyer match up a few more times. Both coaches aren't going anywhere. They both have great programs. But it would have been really, really a lot of fun to see those two programs battle it out nearly every year for either a conference championship or a national championship.
Yeah, you hope they stick around for a long time. And it really seemed like Urban Meyer was going to be in Florida for a long time. So you make a good point that it does seem like we get some rivalries like that more in college basketball. But hopefully, especially with the college football playoff, I think there's more of an opportunity in the New Year's Six Bowls for them to play. Even more so than the BCS, but hopefully there's more games like that. Alex, in your mind, Dustin brought up the point that the perception might be that Nick Saban's starting to be in the decline, but it's amazing the level that he's reached when they can say he's in a decline when they're bringing in all these great recruiting classes. He makes the college football playoff, but clearly Urban Meyer is still coming after the top spot, if you will, in coaching. And college football coaching, if you had to pick one, who do you think has the better career long term, Alex? Is it Urban Meyer or Nick Saban? I know that's choosing between two of the best ever, but if you had to pick one, who's it going to be?
Well, this was a hard one to kind of choose between, and for two reasons. And I'm going to go with Urban Meyer. And the first reason it was hard was because I'm a Michigan fan, and I am just literally brought up to hate anything in scarlet and gray. And for the second reason was because it's so easy to go towards the route of the reigning champs. But if you look at it, you kind of have to note that Urban Meyer is in the Big Ten, and as sad as it is to say, he is in a less competitive conference. And while it's, you know, not benefiting Urban Meyer here, it's the truth. And people who are pro-Saban and pro-SEC are going to use that in any argument that comes about it. But looking at the SEC, you're going to have teams like Tennessee and Auburn, and you know, even a team like Texas A&M that's kind of on the rise with the recruiting, they're always going to come in to take potential Crimson Tide commits. And you look at the SEC right now, anybody that's playing in the South, it's pretty much a crapshoot on where they want to go as far as committing. Whereas if you have a kid who is getting recruited up north, or even is getting a remnant of attention from Ohio State, they know that that's probably the easiest route for a title is to go through the Big Ten. So I don't want to say just because they're, you know, fresh off a win in the national championship, I just truly believe that when you add it up together, it's going to be Urban Meyer. And like I said, as a Michigan fan, it's hard to say, but I have a ton of respect for him. And I think he's been doing absolutely great things for Ohio State. And it's kind of hard not to like Urban Meyer.
Yeah, it does seem like a recurring theme since the season ended on these podcasts is sort of the rise of the Big Ten, whether it's stars, clearly the national championship. You also have the competition with the SEC and the Pac-12. And even most recently, the NFL draft. We saw a bunch of Big Ten running backs go, starting with Melvin Gordon. You had Amir Abdullah. My Falcons got Tevin Coleman. I'm really excited about that. 2014 was definitely the year of the running back in the Big Ten. But if you look around, Dustin, this coming year, it seems like the stars will be on the quarterback side. You have clearly whoever wins the Ohio State QB battle. You have Connor Cook at Michigan State, Joel Staub at Wisconsin, Christian Hackenberg, Penn State, the list goes on. Do you think the biggest stars in the nation this year, kind of like they were in 2014 with the running backs in the Big Ten, could we see the quarterbacks in the Big Ten sort of dominate the stars in not just that conference, but the whole nation?
Well, I think that's going to be a question dependent maybe even on how the offensive line of some of these teams play, because Penn State was abysmal a season ago, Wisconsin wasn't very good, and their quarterbacks couldn't get into a groove. Now, I think the quarterback talent is certainly there. Excuse me. I think there's a lot of guys who can throw the football around. I also like Wes Lunt out at Illinois, and then Nate Sudfeld at Indiana. I think the from top to bottom, the Big Ten has a pretty good group of quarterbacks, and I know I've mentioned this. This is the first time we've been excited about throwing the football in the Big Ten for teams like 10, 15 years, to have that many solid, experienced quarterbacks that can get the ball to their receivers. I think the running game is still going to be really strong with Justin Jackson at Northwestern, Corey Clement at Wisconsin, and obviously Ezekiel at Ohio State. So the running game is not going to be something to completely sleep on. I mean, this isn't going to be like the Big Ten is going to be this air raid attack where they're throwing the ball as much as teams like Oregon and the other squads out in the Pac-12. But it'll be interesting to see how the offensive lines play this season, because I think that's going to be important in how guys like Stabby and Hackenberg perform. But it'll be interesting. I think there's going to be a lot more balance. It won't be a run-heavy league. But I expect to see a lot more points on the scoreboard in the Big Ten this year.
And that's saying something, because there are, you know, some pretty imposing offense in the Big Ten last year. So if they can add to that, that'll be pretty impressive. Alex, I know you follow Michigan pretty closely. A lot of people are saying it's a couple years before the Wolverines are really contending for Big Ten titles. But given what's surrounding the quarterbacks, I know they're in the middle of a quarterback competition. Given what's surrounding those quarterbacks, whoever the starter is, do you think they could surprise and have a pretty good year and be considered in the top, say, half of the Big Ten? Or is this a situation where really whoever earns the job is going to have to gut it out this year and wait for the rest of the team to be better as well?
Yeah, it's definitely been painful, you know, going back to the mid-2000s when you look at, you know, the Chad Hennies and the Mike Hart and the Braylon Edwards, Jason Avance. I mean, the list goes on, and, you know, Michigan was primarily known as an offense that could put points on the board, but it's been painful to watch the past few years. And even with guys like Denard Robinson and Devin Gardner and Devin Funchess, it just seems like they have no answer for, you know, defenses in the Big Ten. So you obviously have Jake Rudock, a guy transferring from Iowa to Michigan. You have Ty Isaac coming in from USC who will be eligible to play. They have a strong running game. So what I expect from Michigan this year is to kind of take it easy, kind of do more of a check down system. They want to establish the ground game. I'm not necessarily sure if they're going to be able to spark the Big Ten like some of these teams, like even Illinois, a team that, you know, was near the top of the conference in 20 plus yard plays, and Nebraska has some flash on the outside, so I'm not necessarily sure if it's going to be next year, but you know, possibly maybe getting John O'Korn in there in the system as well, and getting some of these flashy dynamic receivers can kind of, you know, upstart the program, because the defense isn't really the issue right now. It's been, you know, putting points on the board, and like I mentioned in one of my previous articles, they have had no answer for Ohio State and Michigan State via offense. So not sure if the turnaround is going to be this year, but hopefully in the upcoming years they can get some solid recruits on the outside and kind of manufacture a nice piece for the offense.
Yeah, the Big Ten is setting up to be a pretty tight race for the next few years. I know Ohio State is the clear favorite this year, but a lot of programs heading in the right direction. Thank you guys both for getting us through spring ball these past few weeks on the podcast here. It's a great setup for what is going to be the season of transfers and running with the law for the next couple months in college football. So thank you guys for getting us through spring ball. You can read Dustin and Alex multiple times a week on Today's You and follow them on Twitter. Dustin is at @sharp_shooter. That's S-C-H-U-T-T-R. And Alex is at @AlexK_47. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, Colin.
All right. Let's move on to some college basketball. Plenty going on in the recruiting world there. And the coaching carousel, of course, in the offseason. Bring Bobby Reagan on. Bobby, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Doing pretty well. Well, get things started with an article that you wrote this week, actually. Gained a lot of traction. A lot of people interested in what Florida is going to do with their coaching vacancy. In your mind, who are the best couple candidates? I know you're saying Archie Miller or Buss for Florida, but in addition to Archie Miller, what are some of the names that you think would be good fits there?
Yes, you know, Archie Miller has to be number one on the list for them. What I've read and kind of being in the area to kind of see it develop between Dayton and Xavier, Chris Mack's a name that's come up, Xavier's head coach. He would be another good target. I don't see why he would leave yet, though. He went to Xavier. He's a Cincinnati guy, so it kind of makes sense him being here. The biggest thing is just don't hire John Pelfrey or Anthony Grant, because we've seen them fail in the SEC, and I don't know why people think they would be good besides the fact that they've been assistants at Florida for a couple different stints. But the goal is don't hire one of those. So
There's been some good discussion both in the comments section of that article and on Twitter, actually, about the quality of job that Florida is. Bobby, you make the point that it's a top five job, not necessarily a top five program, meaning they have the resources. There's not the same expectation when you're at a school like Florida that does put so much focus on football. Bev, would you agree? This is Andrew Beverly, our recruiting guru and general college basketball guru. So, Bev, do you agree with Bobby that it is a top five job, or is it not quite the level of program in order for it to be that, given that football is so big in Florida?
Oh, I mean, I think any program that has won, you know, two national titles in the last 10 years, I mean, and made Final Fours, have been the number one seed a bunch of times. I mean, it's definitely a top five job. I don't understand how people could argue against it. Yeah, I mean, Florida is a football school, but they're great at basketball. Like, I mean, that's like saying, I'm trying to think, the football job isn't a good job because UNC is a basketball school. It's like, I don't understand why people wouldn't think it was a top five job. I mean,
well, look at Michigan
State.
Great
program.
Michigan State football is a perfect example. They're successful. They've been in BCS bowls. If you compare to Florida making Final Fours, Florida football has won national titles. You know, that's what it's known for. Michigan State basketball, that's what that school is known for. Did anybody think Michigan State football – does anybody think Mark D'Antoni doesn't have a good job? Or Mark D'Antonio?
Well, yeah. I think the argument would be that it's not a top five job or it's not a top five program. But I do agree that if you're talking about jobs and everything that comes with it, whether it's resources or expectations, there's the difference there between top five job and top five program. So,
like how many other
with these
America
same people. No, you go ahead. Sorry.
I would say how many other coaches in America could have a couple of McDonald's All-Americans be preseason top 10, finish below 500, not even make the NIT, and not have their job on the line? That's what Billy Donovan did this last year.
Yep.
Yeah. Definitely helps winning a couple national titles. But, that's a great point. So,
yeah, and I guess, the last thing I was going to say about the whole, being a top five program, it's a lot of people would argue that Texas – it's like a top five program.
Texas
a lot of
is the number one job in America. To me, if I'm a coach, Texas is the number one job in America for basketball.
Yeah, but Texas isn't a basketball school.
Nope.
Just like Florida isn't a basketball. Florida, in my opinion, is a bigger basketball school than Texas is.
Completely agree.
I just want to throw that in there.
The expectations are lower?
Well, it's kind of what I mentioned in the article. The top five programs, that's Kentucky, Kansas, Carolina, Duke, UCLA. Those are the top five programs. When you look at jobs, it's, ability to recruit without really having to leave the area. If you're at Iowa State, you have to recruit outside of Iowa. Florida, you don't really have to leave the state. So you have that. Resources, there's a ton of money in Florida's department. Kind of a hot seat factor. Like I said, what Billy Donovan did this year, even if he didn't win two titles back-to-back, people wouldn't be all up in arms. If that happened at North Carolina or if that happened at Indiana, Crean would have been fired right away.
Actually, that's a great segue into the next topic because Indiana definitely looks like a team that's on the rise, maybe not based on play last year, but with the recruits they're bringing in. Bev, you wrote an article about how a recruit like Thon Maker could take Indiana from what will probably be a top 15 team next year, preseason regardless, to maybe even contending for a national title. Do you think if they were to get his commitment, that it would make that much impact? Is Indiana a national title contender if Thon Maker goes there?
I already think Indiana's going to be good because Yogi Ferrell's coming back. Thomas Bryant, man, I'm telling you, if y'all haven't watched this guy, Thomas Bryant, play, he's unbelievable. He was the best player in the Dick's Nationals in New York, which is the national championship for high school basketball. He was the most dominant player in a tournament that had Ben Simmons, Dwayne Bacon, Alonzo Trier. Thomas Bryant was the best player in that tournament. He can stretch the floor. He can do. He's an unbelievable rebounder. He has a great motor. I think adding Thon to that, first of all, it would just make them such a hard team to guard. And that's how it would be wherever Thon ends up, whether it's Kentucky, Indiana. I don't really know why he's considering Arizona State. I think that's kind of random. And then Kansas. He just adds a whole other element to any kind of lineup because, this is a guy who's 7'1", who could legitimately, he's a great stretch four. He's not a center, and people need to stop talking like he's a center just because he's 7 feet tall because his skill set isn't that of a center. Defensively, he is, but offensively, he's very – he can shoot, he can dribble, he can drive, he can go coast to coast. He's really, really good. And I think if Indiana gets him and they don't make at least the Elite Eight, it would be a failure of a season. I do think that he needs to get a little bigger. He's 7 feet 1 inches tall and he weighs 15 to 20 pounds more than I do, and I'm not like, and I'm like a decently in shape dude. Like, I mean, he is really like skinny.
See, I think even if Indiana gets Maker, they're not, they're the fourth best team in the Big Ten.
Behind Michigan State.
Maryland, Michigan State, Michigan. And Michigan.
You think Michigan is going to be really good?
Michigan's going to be awesome next year. I'm all in on Michigan.
Wow.
Getting a healthy Caris LeVert, a healthy Derek Walton back. John Beilein might be the least talked about great coach in college basketball.
I agree with that.
They return everybody. So, you know, somebody like, what the heck was the, oh, his name's slipping mind, the big goofy white center they had, Ricky Doyle.
Okay.
You know, experience like that he got last year, he's playing this year without, you know, the expectations of having to be the star like he was last year. They're going to be so good. I really like Michigan next year. I think they're actually going to finish second in the Big Ten
behind Maryland.
I'm a huge Caris LeVert fan. I think, you know, getting Walton back, having him and Spike Albrecht as your two point guards, I mean, that's, you can play them, you'll be small, but you can play them together. But having Albrecht come off the bench for you as your backup point guard, not many other teams in the country can say, hey, we have a senior with this type of experience coming back and being our backup point guard.
And yet nobody even mentioned, and you can see why, nobody mentioned Wisconsin. The national championship game appearance, they lose just about everybody. But I do want to get your take, both of you, on the team that they took down in the Final Four, in particular, Willie Cauley-Stein, or as he is now known, Willie Trill Cauley-Stein. Bobby, you had a great news piece on that, got a lot of traction. Just your immediate take, you approve or disapprove of Willie Trill Cauley-Stein?
I love it. I mean, how many middle names do you know? do you know your brother's middle name? Can you recite it right now? Half the people probably can't, so who cares?
I think so.
There's been some phenomenally racist comments about him changing his name and how teams should stay away, which just make me laugh almost about how dumb people can be. But, I mean, watching the guy the last couple of years at Kentucky, and as everybody knows, I went to Kentucky, so following along pretty closely, the kid's awesome. I mean, if you it's just who he is. You know, the floral shirt he wore underneath the Final Four last year underneath his jersey when he had to sit on the bench, it's not surprising by any means. It's awesome. And if you really care about it, you're just some senile, probably older guy that just wants to be mad at the world.
All right, so the Kentucky fan and grad likes it. Bev, what do you think about Trill?
Dude, I love it. Although, what I talked about in the fan tweet of the night, the other night, Bill Barnwell of Grantland brought up a very, very good point. And, I mean, I just kind of wish he had gone all in with Trilly Cauley-Stein and just changed the first name. That would have been incredible. But, no, I mean, I like it. I think it's awesome. It fits his personality. Yeah, I mean, these people, you know, calling him an idiot and worse and, like, a thug or whatever. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Like,
people say he should fall in the draft because of this.
I saw that.
That's my favorite.
Because he changed his name, his game hasn't changed. Like,
right.
Like, what?
Like, he's going to fall from number 7 to 30.
Yeah. Yeah, no. If that does happen, that team that picks 30th will be very, very lucky.
If that happens, I'm changing my name and entering the draft next year, so I go from undrafted to lottery pick.
Yeah.
Wow. So I think we should definitely push the Trilly Cauley-Stein. I like that as well. Could really if he's trying to do, was it Marshawn Lynch and sell T-shirts, I think that would go a long way. But
well,
thanks, guys.
He came out with
a
logo like a week ago, and now he has to come up with a new one.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of confused by that.
Thanks, guys, for all the latest on both college basketball and college basketball pop culture. Really appreciate it. You can read Bobby and Bev multiple times a week on Today's You and follow them on Twitter. Bobby is at UKLefty22 and Bev is at Andrew_Bev. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks.
I'm sorry for not being better with Twitter. I started back on Twitter yesterday by tweeting at Serge the Soda. They retweeted me and tweeted me back. Yes, Serge exists again, and I just want to give a shout out to Serge.
There's your Today's You success story for the day. So we'll end on that high note.
And I still hate everybody's team. So you can still follow that on Twitter. Yes.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks.
See y'all.